Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Thursday, the 18th of October. This hour of the program, we're going to be talking about an extremely important and very serious topic. The star, really, and the producer of an important documentary film on Darfur, The Devil Came on Horseback. It is the story, well, it's more than a great film, one reviewer said. It's also the rare kind of nonfiction film that can actually open eyes. It should be burned onto thousands of DVDs and simply handed out on street corners to anybody saying, I don't really get what this whole Darfur thing is about. And even if nothing is done to stop the genocide, people couldn't say that they had no idea that it was happening. It features the firsthand testimony of former U.S. Marine Captain Brian Steidel, who will be joining us in a moment. And he serves as a Marine for 4 years. He goes on the internet after that service is done and is looking for a job, and he finds a job in Sudan being a monitor for the ceasefire. And he goes to Darfur having no idea what to expect. He is not given a gun. He's not given anything except his camera. And he's very good with his camera. And he takes pictures of murderous rampages conducted in Darfur with the participation and support of the Sudanese government. He comes back to the United States. He has to tell this story. The New York Times publishes some of these pictures, which spreads this story around somewhat. But the State Department tells him, don't show these pictures. He has a hard time getting a lot of support in Congress because people in Congress are saying, we got all our resources in Iraq. We can't deal with this genocide because we don't want to offend China. We got oil here. We got terrorism to deal with. And so it's an incredible story. And, you know, as people said after the Holocaust 60 years, well, they said then, never again. It certainly is a rallying cry for the genocide taking place in Darfur. It is it's an amazing film to watch. This Marine captain is extraordinary. I'm anxious to meet him in just a moment. So, I mean, it's hard. It's a hard thing to watch, but it's an important thing to watch. So, having said that, here's Rhonda Fanning, who is our producer of this program, and we're also in a pledge drive. It's a weird thing to pledge this DVD, except that we do deal with some issues that are incredibly important to the world and to humanity and to goodness, and it is a DVD that's incredibly well done, that's very hard to watch, but people should see it.
And it tells a story that's not often told.
Right.
But here on public radio this hour, if you call, you will get a copy of The Devil Came on Horseback for a pledge of $180. You can go online at WPR.org, or you can give one of our volunteers a call at 800-383-9772. In this hour, you will get a copy of that copy of The Devil Came on Horseback chronicling the genocide in Darfur for a pledge of $180 this hour.
And it's an important film to see. As I was saying, it's hard to watch some of it, and yet you realize that it's a situation that needs to stop, and somehow the only way that it can stop is perhaps to burn copies of this DVD, to get this DVD. I guess Brian reached a point where he was just stopping people on the street, showing them his pictures, saying, look at what is going on in this part of the world. We have to do something.
Right.
And you can't believe that nothing's been done after all these years. You just throw up your hands when you see this and you say, wait a second, we know what the right thing to do. How can we not be doing the right thing here? Well, as you can tell, we want to talk about this issue. And so we will, but pledge, we will be very happy to send you this DVD for $180. And then I know a lot of you are concerned about this. That's a wonderful thing.
And then you will be able to share it with
audience.
Friends and family and
yeah,
pass it
exactly.
on and get the story out there.
Right. If people on public radio aren't concerned about this, nobody's concerned about this. And they are concerned about it, I know. So WPR.org, if you would like to pledge online. Or if you would like to just call for a $180 pledge, The Devil Came on Horseback, and you will know what's going on in Darfur after you see this. Or you can pledge online at 800-383-9772, 800-383-9772. Thanks, Rhonda.
Thank you.
Okay. We'll see you in a while. And we will be talking now about this documentary film on Darfur. It uses the photos and the firsthand testimony of former U.S. Marine Captain Brian Steidel. In the aftermath of the Holocaust, many said never again, and it is now a rallying cry to end genocide in the Darfur region of Sudan. The documentary is extremely moving, and it is told through the voice and the photos of Brian Steidel. Brian served a six-month duty as an unarmed observer in Darfur with the African Union Peacekeeping Force during the year 2004, after the ceasefire that supposedly ended the 20-year civil war. The film is what he witnessed and what happened to him as a result of being there, deeply upset by the inaction of the international community. Seidel is traveling all over the country. He was a soldier, a witness to genocide, and now certainly is a passionate activist. He has addressed massive rallies. He's met with top government officials. He has addressed the Save Darfur rally in Washington, D.C. He's gone to the International Criminal Court to get people arrested and tried for their horrendous actions in this country. And he is with us. We also have with us Jane Wells, who is a freelance writer and activist who went to Sudan in March of 2005 to bear witness to the genocide in Darfur, and she is the producer of the documentary The Devil Came on Horseback. Brian, thank you very much for being with us. Or is this, Brian is on this line, perhaps. Brian, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you. And Jane, thank you so much for being with us as well.
Well, thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Tell the story, please, Brian, of how you happened to go there. It really is an amazing story. You had finished 4 years with the Marines, and essentially you were looking for a job, weren't you?
Yeah, essentially I was looking for a well-paying job that, you know, was adventurous, and I wanted to, I was looking overseas specifically, and so I found a job on the internet. I basically said patrol leader Sudan. And I headed off to Sudan to be first part of a mission that monitored the North-South ceasefire, now Comprehensive Peace Agreement. And so I worked for 7 months in the Nuba Mountains of Sudan. When I finally worked my way up to be a senior operations officer for the mission, I found myself behind a desk again. And I decided, look, I want to get back out in the field. Heard about this African Union mission that was starting up in Darfur and volunteered for that mission and headed over there and worked there for the remaining 6 months I was in the country.
You had no gun. All you had was a camera. Thank goodness you had that because you know how to use it, don't you?
Well, I've taken some pictures before and, it was good that I had it. I was happy to be able to document what was going on so that I could bring it back and share it.
Did you have any idea, were you briefed at all at what the situation was in Darfur before your legs crossed over there?
No, we knew very little. Even within Sudan, we'd heard a few rumors of some bad things that were happening and the fact that this may be a genocide and that all these killings were going on, these displaced people. But we still didn't really know what was going on. The African Union was a very tight-lipped mission. The Sudanese government had initially kicked out all of the people, all of the journalists from Darfur so that no word was traveling outside of Darfur.
Mm-hmm. And it wasn't too long after you got there that you saw some atrocities and have pictures of them that are just unbelievable. And I think that you said at one point you saw, children from a girls' school who were killed, and you had photos of that. And early on you said if these were released, there would be troops here in a matter of days. You believed there would be, didn't you?
I believed. I believe that the public around the world, that the news media's, that the governments would be outraged by what was happening, and that they would all do whatever they possibly could to stop these things from happening. I mean, if this happened, in Chicago,
mm-hmm.
a bunch of people went into a girls' school and raped a bunch of girls, chained them up, and burned them alive. They'd be noosed in the streets.
Right.
This is just horrendous.
Right.
That these things are actually happening, and here we are nearly 4 years later, and they still are happening.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. Tell me, lay the groundwork politically here of what's going on. Why is there such animosity? Why is there genocide going on in Darfur? Explain the politics of it, please.
Well, it's gotten much more complicated over the last year or so, but the general premise for the whole conflict was that there is this marginalization within the country of these African tribes, of these black African tribes, by these African Arab government, and there is no equal development. I mean, Khartoum has office buildings and super malls and paved roads and street lamps, and in Darfur and in all of the African areas, the black African areas of Sudan, they have grass huts. There's no electricity. There's little running water, if any. And so they wanted these equal rights, and the government was backing these Arab nomadic tribes, allowing them to do whatever they could, you know, in there by taking land, by harassing these people. So finally the rebels, you know, they organized in these rebel groups, and they stood up and they fought back against the government. And the government, who is this military dictatorship, they rule by an iron fist, and they wanted to make an example out of the Darfurian people to make sure that no one will ever stand up against them again. And so they use a policy of, you know, drain the pond to catch the fish. Mm-hmm. And so they just went after anybody that possibly may support them. And that's basically what kicked off this entire, genocidal campaign.
In one of the major groups, that's the name of this documentary, the Janjaweed, the Devil on Horseback.
Mm-hmm. Well, they are these. They mainly come from these Arab nomadic tribes. They are the proxy militias of the government. They are trained and armed by the government of Sudan, and they are basically. They first of all, they don't represent the overall Arab population of Sudan or the Arab population of Darfur. They are a very distinct group within the Arab population that have a tremendous amount of hatred of these black Africans. They are mainly nomadic, therefore they want the land. So they're motivated by land resources. They're motivated by money from the government. They're motivated by the fact that they get to steal everything they possibly can, take over these people's homes, take over everything they own, and even steal some of the people into slavery.
Mm-hmm. And the pictures that you have of people who have lost everything and the incredible bleakness of the land, there is nothing. These villages are burned, people are killed, people in marketplaces are destroyed. They have nowhere to go. They have, as they say, no food. They have no water. They have no place to live. They have literally nothing.
Yes, I mean that's true. That they're left with nothing, except for, you know, a hope that somebody around the world will actually listen to their cries and come and help them, and the fact that there are, you know, these aid groups are on the ground working as hard as they can in a very unsecure situation to try to save these people's lives.
Mm-hmm. Let's just move ahead for a moment because we have many people who want to talk about this and we want to talk to Jane. After being there for some time, after putting together these pictures, you, as we said earlier, assumed that the world would pay attention to this. But lo and behold, you come to the United States. You got to deal with the bureaucracy of the UN Security Council. You got people in Congress. You testify there, but they're not, you know, people understand that there's a problem here, but we're too bogged down in Iraq and we're too bogged down other places. And we just don't have, what is it, the political will to do anything? Why didn't troops go in immediately and do something?
Well, we have to first understand that our government represents us and our interests. And so without us saying anything, there is no reason for the United States government to use our resources, use our money to actually go into Darfur. Why? Because we don't gain anything from it.
Mm-hmm.
It's sad to say this, but we don't gain anything economically, strategically, anything. There's no reason for the United States to be involved in that. And that's the responsibility of our government to be responsible for us.
Mm-hmm.
So in order for our government to actually do anything, we have to make it our issue. It has to become an interest of ours. The people in the United States have to say, you know we don't get any economic gain out of it, but this should not happen on the earth. Why are we here? Why the United States is this great country that we are? Why we live where we are and we have all the things we do and we are so privileged to, you know, we have to say that we're not going to allow this to happen and convince our government to actually do something about it.
Mm-hmm. So let's talk about this a little bit more, Jane. Is it that we don't want to offend China? China gets a lot of oil from Sudan. Is it that we figure that Sudan is going to be an ally with us in a fight against terror? What is it? There's got to be something that keeps us from acting on this genocide.
Well, I think the issue of sharing intelligence. The Sudanese government obviously has a lot of intelligence about al-Qaeda, or some intelligence anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And they've been very deft at releasing bits of information about Osama bin Laden's stay in Sudan to our government. So that's one possibility. I think the Chinese relationship here is complex, and a lot of people are working on raising awareness about that with the Olympic Games coming up.
Right.
So I think it's just a complex variety of factors.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously the war in Iraq means that there's very little interest in using our forces, and they probably wouldn't be helpful at this point.
Right. And yet I'm sure everybody who sees this film, who hears Brian's story, and who remembers the Holocaust says, skip all of those. Skip China. Skip oil. Skip all of this. We've got something horrendous that humanity should not allow to happen.
Well, absolutely. And I mean, just for myself, I became engaged in this issue because of what I failed to do as an individual during the Rwandan genocide. And so when I realized this was happening again, you know, I thought, well, I have to take responsibility myself for doing something. And I think that, you know, as Brian said, if we all make our elected officials know it is an issue for us, whether it serves our interests or not, it, you know, it's a problem of humanity in general. And if we can connect to that, then I think we can put pressure on our politicians, on the Chinese, on the Security Council to have this thing end.
And at this point, it sounds like it very much has to be groups of people getting together to see the devil came on horseback. It has to be more mass rallies taking place in Washington. It has to be more columns by Nicholas Kristof. That's the kind of pressure that's being put to bear right now.
Yeah, well, we're in an election year
right
now, and I think it's very important that all the candidates across all parties know that, you know, that we care about this issue, if people do.
You went to Jane mentioned Rwanda. You went there as well, didn't you, Brian?
Yes, actually, with Jane's help and along with Jane, we went to Rwanda to witness the you know, the commemoration of their genocide there 12 years after the effect, and it was a very very moving time.
How did you find Brian, Jane?
Well, when I decided to go to Darfur, it was around the time that Brian was coming back, and we have a sort of rather tenuous family connection. His sister is married to my husband's stepbrother. So
it's always
through the family network. But she said, if you're going, you have to speak to Brian, and I did before I went. And then when I came back, you know, we decided to try and work together to help get his story out and get this film made.
And while you were there, you were documenting what you saw. You sent reports, Brian, didn't you? But nobody ever really responded to you. A lot of your reports never got to the American Embassy.
Yeah, I mean, because of the nature of the African Union, they everything they do is considered, you know, secret or classified, which to me doesn't really make any sense. But that's the way it is. And so when we write these reports, they would be debated, they would be passed up from sector to sector and then off to the headquarters of the African Union. And from there, they're supposed to all be disseminated. But out of the close to 80 reports that we wrote in my sector, in my time there, four of them reached the American Embassy. Now, I understand that a few of them have now come out, but they come out, you know, 6 months, 8 months after the fact.
Mm-hmm.
Where, you know, international pressure no longer will make a difference. And these are things that in my belief, the African Union should be posting on the Internet immediately as they're written, not something that takes months for them to go ahead and post
mm-hmm.
up so people can watch.
Right.
But if the world needs to respond to it, I mean, if the world is going to respond to it, they have to know about these things.
Right. Who in the world at the State Department told you not to distribute your pictures?
Well, I'd been asked after I came back not to do that by a couple different individuals. The reason being is that they were afraid that I would you know, jeopardize relations between the United States and Sudan, that I would jeopardize the African Union mission and possibly you know, force the expulsion of U.S. personnel from Sudan. And of course, none of that has happened. That was one of the concerns, and it was a legitimate concern. But I felt that the need to share these photographs was more important than jeopardizing that.
We're going to welcome phone calls for our guest. Brian Steidel, former U.S. Marine captain and a member of the African Union team monitoring the supposed ceasefire in Sudan after the end of a 20-year civil war. And we're also speaking with Jane Wells, a freelance writer and activist who went to Sudan in March of 2005 to bear witness to the genocide in Darfur. The pictures, Brian had this incredible assignment. He had no he had no gun, he had no weapons, but he had a camera, and so he was a person who witnessed horrendous atrocities. And then since his time being there is trying to alert the world, and particularly because he's an American, alert America as to what's going on there to stop genocide. And as you heard Jane say, which was pretty honest of her, she felt as a journalist that she had failed during the genocide in Rwanda, and she wasn't going to let that happen again. 800-486-8655 is our number, 227-2050 if you're joining us in Milwaukee. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We go to phone calls for our guests now at 800-486-8655, starting with Judy from Reedstown. Hi, Judy. You're on the air.
Hi. I'd like to thank you for what you've done. And just a quick story about an experience of mine in the early 70s. I took my World War II era mother to a still photo exhibit documenting our Japanese internment camps, which were located in the U.S. when we locked up Japanese origin, and partway through she began to cry, and she kept saying, I didn't know. I know we didn't treat the Japanese quite as brutally as what's happening in Darfur, but if more people had known, if there had been some kind of photo documentation, we maybe could have done better with that project and wouldn't have it on our consciences now.
And in this case, thank you very much for the call. It is true that a lot of people still don't know, even with your efforts, even with the New York Times, even with very large rallies in this country, a lot of people still, Jane, don't know about what's going on in Darfur, do they?
No, they don't. And I think that, you know, what happens is it's great that the New York Times covers it, Nicholas Kristof
yes.
writes a series of articles, and then there's this perception, well, you know, we've done that. I mean, a bit like with the you know, the monks in Burma, you know, that was all over the press, you know, 10 days ago, and it's sort of dying down
right,
now. And
right.
The Spice Girls reunion or Britney Spears' latest exploit somehow replaces that. So I think it's really important that, you know, we do keep up the pressure and keep reminding ourselves and our communities and our politicians, too, that this is going on. I mean, it's been years now since I was there and Brian was there, and it goes on, and we still must stop it. So
right.
We have to keep trying to find ways to keep it in the public attention and get ownership of the problem ourselves.
You spoke, there's a moving part, the whole documentary is moving, but you spoke at the American Holocaust Museum, didn't you, about this issue, and Elie Wiesel has spoken very movingly about the genocide in Darfur, Brian.
Yes. You know, that was one of the first events that I did when I came back, and it was great to have the Holocaust Museum, you know, sponsor that talk. It was, you know, it was really good. We had a you know, good audience, and so it was great. And since then, you know, I've basically been speaking to multiple different audiences all over the United States and over the world.
So who's fighting your fight? You've been all over. You went to the International Criminal Court. You've spoken to people at the UN and into Congress. Who you need somebody in large power carrying the banner for you. Who's doing that?
Well, I wouldn't say there's anybody in large power. We've got people like Jane. We've got my sister Gretchen, who you know, was one of the producers on the film and also, you know, co-authored the book with me. We've got the other filmmakers. And so we have a team of individuals, and even then our team continuously gets larger and larger as we meet more people and we tell them about this issue. They go forward, and then they also start the fight. And so we have this, you know, this huge grassroots movement now surrounding this issue. But we still need to continue to spread it, because there are still people that don't know about what's going on.
Jane, same to you. You bring this documentary. Who's seen it? Who's going to do something because they've seen it?
Well, we hope and we encourage every audience to go out. We give action cards out after screenings, telling people what they can do, to call 1-800-GENOCIDE, to look into divesting from Sudan, and we try and give them tools and things they can do, organizations they can support, like Global Grassroots, which is Brian's sister's organization helping survivors of the genocide rebuild their lives. So we try to give people tools, and we hope that, you know, by getting the movie out, it's been in 70 cities so far in the country and 30 countries around the world, and it's continuing to be shown, that it will be a movement that will build and keep building, and the video will get the story out to, you know, ever more people.
Mm-hmm.
I sort of see it as a sort of tapestry kind of image that is growing and growing, and it's not a situation that will end overnight, so there, you know, we have to keep building the movement, yeah.
Habu from Madison, hi.
Yes, good morning, and thank you for taking my question.
Mm-hmm.
Just as an aside, I wonder why, as horrendous as this thing is, which is occurring in the Sudan, and I'm no apologist for the Sudanese regime, why is it that a bigger genocide, which is right, occurring in Congo, is not covered, where 4 million people have died as of 3 years, and this thing is perpetrated on women and babies and children. With those kind of numbers, Darfur looks very small, but it is lamentable all the same. And so I wonder why the gatekeepers at Wisconsin Public Radio do not bring such stories to the American public.
We can only deal with one thing at a time here,
yes,
Habu. And we're talking about
scale,
Darfur right now.
Yes, if you're talking about scale, then and also in length of time, then Congo certainly wins out.
Okay. Do you want to respond to that, Jane?
I think that he has a very valid point, but I guess that if we have to split hairs, we could talk. I mean, no, I don't want to split hairs about this one, but, genocide versus crimes against humanity, they're all wrong, and they all need addressing. Unfortunately, at this point, we've only made a film about
Darfur.
About Darfur, so I definitely would like to go to Congo and learn more about that.
Michael from DePere is next. Hi, Michael.
Hello. Yeah, this is Michael Gregorian. I have a question and more so a comment. I should say a comment and a question. And, I'm of Armenian origin. And, talking about Darfur, and I've been working very closely with SaveDarfur.org people. And, one thing I cannot help to notice is that there is a cycle of violence. And the genocide in Darfur would not have happened if the former genocides have been adequately addressed and punished by the superpowers. And as we speak, I'm a pragmatic, and I do believe that we have to look objectively into issues. But as of right now, the Turkish lobby is pumping millions of dollars, I should say hundreds of millions of dollars, into the U.S. politics and trying to influence and intimidate the United States government, a freely elected government, a free people, to deny and say, no, the genocide, yeah, some massacres happened here and there, a couple hundred thousand Armenians, but it wasn't really a genocide. It was more so a massacre. And it is shameful that, we are trying to close our eyes at that. And until we really fix the causes of the issue, because the Darfur genocide, it's a consequence, as tragic as it is, and I myself have spent a lot of time and money on it to prevent it, but the experience shows that until we address genocides of the past, we're going to have more and more genocides of this type.
Okay, thanks for the call. Brian, you want to respond?
Yeah, absolutely. I agree, and that's what we're trying to do here. We can't go back in time, and we can't fix what we didn't do. I wish we could. I wish we could go back to 1994 and stop the Rwanda genocide. I wish we could go back to World War One and stop what happened against the Armenian people. I wish we could do these things and stop what happened against Pol Pot and the rape of Nanking and all these other ones that have happened around the world. But what we can do now is we can set a platform and we can build this social network of individuals that are working towards this. And that's what's very important here, is that we need to encourage our press agencies to cover these issues because they are important. We need to encourage our lawmakers to actually stop these things. And so by using this genocide, we can go ahead and move forward from here and hopefully prevent other genocides from happening in the future.
that rallying cry, never again, never again, what is it that we should have done? What is it that we need to do now to make that a reality? It is unbelievable that these horrendous things are being done to human beings by other human beings, and everybody just doesn't make it stop right now, because most human beings on Earth know that it's horrendous. Jane?
Well, I think, you know, it's really important that we use education as a tool to end genocide, because we know this one's going on. We have to educate ourselves, and then we have to educate our children, because if we don't raise new generations of children who think that stopping genocide is an absolute moral priority, then it will continue. So I think it's very important that, you know, in schools, children know what's going on, and we don't try and protect them from this kind of atrocity, but we educate them to become activists. And, you know, a lot of the people who've been very significant in the movement to stop this genocide were college students, you know, who started GINET and STAND, and they've been enormously influential. And I think we have to keep moving, you know, on and on, educating younger and younger people about this.
Brian, at one point in the documentary, you, and it's hard to watch you and not cry with you, you really break down. You've seen too much. You've seen too many horrors, and there are too many people who are not listening to you to affect change. A couple questions about that. Why are you not totally beaten down by all of this? Because people should have responded to you immediately. And also, how can you remain sane when you've seen such horrors?
Well, I think, first of all, you know, I've got the support of, you know, the individuals that, you know, like Jane, that made this documentary film, my sister, you know, others around us, my fiance and I, who started up an organization called Hope. You know, all of these different people that you know, I surround myself with. And by going to these college campuses, I was at just the University of California, Santa Cruz on Monday. They've incorporated my book into part of their core classes for their freshmen. We did a screening of the documentary there. And, you know, there's 400 freshmen that are there, you know, 18, 19 years old, that were, I mean, they were so into this issue. I mean, we got into a two-hour discussion afterwards, and I was just like, this is amazing. And so that's why, I mean, that's how I continue, is by, you know, when I go and talk to these people and see them, see that, you know, press is still covering this issue, that people are still interested in this issue, and that, you know, that's where I gain my support from. And as long as they're still there, then I will still be here.
How about you, Jane?
I think Brian really said it there. I'm going to keep working on this until this one's over, and then work to make sure that, you know, I can do what I can to prevent other genocides before they happen.
There's something, and tell me exactly what it is. There's something exceptional about this film because of Brian, because of you, Brian, because you were a Marine, and you know, and you talk about how you wish that you almost had weapons so you could get rid of some of these people who are doing such horrendous things. But it's that voice, Jane, isn't it? It's Brian's voice. It's Brian wanting to do the right thing, and with his military background and all that really makes this a very extraordinary film.
Yeah, I think he's obviously a great speaker, and I think he's become very wise about this.
Mm-hmm.
But also, it's the story of an individual taking responsibility for something, and you know, going from the military model where he's part of a huge group to becoming an activist. And I don't think Brian even imagined when he first came back that he would become this activist and inspire people in that way. And I think he inspires people actually through, you know, to be peaceful in trying to resolve this and not just march in and use military might. And I think that's a very, very effective and moving story.
Yes, it is. You never thought you would be an activist, Brian?
No, I still don't like to label things, because some people, you know, consider certain labels negative and other people consider it positive. So I don't even like to say that. You know, somebody said, what are you? I wouldn't say that I was an activist. I would say that, you know, I am just trying to inform people of this issue and get them involved in it. But it's just you know, we have to do what we can. You know, it's if you see something that's wrong, you should stand up and say, that's wrong. You know, that shouldn't happen. And so that's what I do.
I'm glad you do it. I know you have to go. Do you have to go now? I don't want to hold you longer than. Or
we can stay a little bit.
Good. Okay. We'll take a couple more phone calls. Jeff from Madison.
Yes. Good for you for informing people about this. There's so many points. I'll try to keep this really short. This has been going on so long, longer than Congo. If we not in Darfur, in the Nuba Mountains, there was genocide or attempted genocide by the Bashir regime back in 93. I was leading a team, an evaluation team for the UN there, talked to people who had seen truckloads of Nubians being removed from that area to work on forced labor in agricultural plantations mm-hmm. in other parts of Sudan. It's the same guy, Omar al-Bashir, has been there since 89. So when I hear that our State Department is somewhat timid or hesitant about upsetting our relations with Sudan, what are we trying to avoid? I mean, if you take something as sort of silly as Parade magazine a month ago labeled him the number one dictator in the world, this has been going. That regime has been committing acts of this kind for so long that I don't know what it is we are hesitant about. It's just ridiculous.
Brian.
Yeah, no, I absolutely agree with you 100%. He led the campaign against the South, which killed, more than 2 million people, displaced 4 million from their homes. And, I worked in the Nuba Mountains for the first 7 months and saw villages that were no longer there, but entire valleys that there used to be villages of 100,000 people. And all that's left is basically the skeletons of their homes with trees growing through them now. And I think it's time we look at this and we say, okay, well, this is not right. Even now, the comprehensive peace agreement between the South is starting to break down. The South government the Southern government has walked out of this unity government. They have been arming for the last 8 to 10 months. They are all preparing to go back to war to fight because he still will not respect them, even after this internationally brokered peace treaty. It's time we move on.
Yeah. One more phone call in a moment here on the Ideas Network. We have time for one more phone call, and it's Jess from Eau Claire. Hi, Jess.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call today. My question basically is, I know you can't run away from your problems, but is there any way that they could move people to different areas? I know that they can send people to refugee camps, but do you think there would be anything, other countries maybe opening up immigration to get these poor people out of these areas just to, kind of start doing damage control?
Well, they're in Chad, aren't they? And the Janjaweed are after them even in Chad, Brian.
Yeah,
there's around, the thing is it's a huge scale. I mean, there's 3.5 million
Jeez.
People that have been displaced from their homes. Around 300,000 or so have crossed into Chad, another 150,000 have crossed into the Central African Republic. Nobody really knows how many have crossed into southern Sudan. The scale of it is just huge. And most of the other countries around there have their own issues. Chad is one of the poorest countries in the world and has been generous to allow 300,000 people to come into their country. And so they don't have many resources themselves to deal with this type of issue. As was mentioned, the Janjaweed is crossing the border. Sudanese government is also crossing the border to attack these individuals inside of these other countries. And so, I welcome the decision by the EU the other day that they were going to send in 4,000 troops to protect the Chad and Central African Republic borders so they can stop these attacks. And hopefully that will allow these individuals, at least within these countries, to live out their lives in peace.
Mm-hmm. Thank you both so much for being with us. Thanks for... There's a lot behind all these words, a lot of work that needs to be done on this issue. Thank you, Brian, so much for being with us. Jane, thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks. Our guest, Brian Steidel, former U.S. Marine captain, he was a Marine for 4 years, and then he was looking for a job, and he went on the internet and found that there was a job helping to monitor the ceasefire. Quote, ceasefire, Sudanese ceasefire, and he became a member of the African Union team, and this film is what he witnessed there. Jane Wells, freelance writer and activist who went to Sudan to bear witness to the genocide in Darfur. It's sort of hard to move into an upbeat pledge thing here, but there are times when we take on issues that are not certainly not very pleasant, and this is one of them. We've talked about Darfur before, but But somebody needs to talk about it. I mean, somebody needs to talk about it. And so we're talking about it. And the DVD, it's one of those DVDs that is hard to watch, but people need to watch it. You need to pay attention when things like this are happening on Earth. $180 pledge. Gather some people, watch this, and try and figure out the world and how to stop people from killing people. And here's the number to pledge, 800-383-9772, 800-383-9772, or you can pledge online if you'd like at WPR.org. Rhonda Fanning is joining me in our studios. Hi, Rhonda. Bill Estes, also here. Hello, Bill. Hello, Rhonda.
Good morning.
Hello.
WPR.org is our secure website if you'd like to pledge your support to the conversation you just heard, pledge your support to the quality and the passion of the guests that you hear every morning with Kathleen Dunn and her producer, Rhonda Fanning, or all the programs that we bring you here, thought-provoking programs day after day after day after day. Go to your phone right now and pledge at 800-383-9772. We have a hefty goal of $9,000 this particular hour, but we can do it with your support right now at the $15 a month level. You can get the DVD that Kathleen has been talking about, and you can pledge your support to make sure these sorts of long-form conversations keep coming your way. WPR.org.
That is why programs like these are so important, and something that you only get from Wisconsin Public Radio. Right. We strive to bring you the stories that go beyond the headlines, the stories that are buried in the back of the paper. But oftentimes these are complex issues that can't be summed up in just the who and the what and the when.
Mm-hmm.
They need to be given a historical perspective. They need to be put into a social, religious, and military or government context, and that's what we try to do here on Wisconsin Public Radio. We provide the platform for these hour-long, in-depth conversations, but we can't continue to do that without your support. And this is such an important hour to call and pledge, one,
yes,
because we have a high goal, and two, because everyone needs to see this DVD. If you don't know what's going on in Darfur, or if you do, this would be a perfect way to communicate that to
do
friends,
fundraisers, yeah,
family.
Yeah.
Get the DVD, a pledge of $180, and you will want to pass it on and keep this story going. 800-383-9772 or log on to WPR.org.
There's something about Brian's story. Brian is this fresh-faced, enthusiastic, he seems like a kid to me, but I'm not a kid anymore, who wants to serve his country, who comes from a naval background, and all of a sudden, there he is with a camera and seeing incredible atrocities taking place. And so, you know, he's just a good person. It's a story of one good person trying to do the right thing, seeing these horrors and bringing the story to the world, really.
And such a hard time getting
exactly
people to listen to
it's
him.
It's Brian doing this. Right. You know, here's Brian, the U.S. Marine, who's one of a few people witnessing what's going on there. It's one of those films that will stay with me for a long time. There's no doubt about that. When I hear Darfur, when I read about Darfur, which I do in the newspaper, I'll see it in a completely different light from
now
on.
Well, you're going to have those mental images that you took from the
film.
Oh,
yeah. 800-383-9772. Get this DVD if you can and show it, and then pass it along and have more people show it. 800-383-9772. What's the premium thing? Is it
$180.
Thank you. $180.
$15 a month if you'd like to stretch that out in monthly payments. We're going to make this very easy for you to become a member of Wisconsin Public Radio, a contributor to Wisconsin Public Radio, and get this special thank you gift, which we hope you'll watch, absorb, think about, and then pass on to someone who'll pass it on to someone who'll pass it on.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the sort of conversations that you hear on Wisconsin Public Radio day after day, week after week, as you know, because you're a regular listener to Wisconsin Public Radio. Granny D is another person who sort of just started this movement. And Kathleen has talked to Granny D, who walked right across the country to make her points in Congress. The gentleman who was the subject of Hotel Rwanda has been on our air.
Yes.
Butterfly Sunshine. What was the woman's name who sat up in a tree in Seattle to stop the cutting down
right,
of the?
Right. I can't remember.
Yeah, we
right
talked now to her on her cell phone up in the
Butterfly.
Giant butterfly. Somebody. On the West Coast, who was trying to save the rainforest there. So Kathleen and Rhonda have these ways of finding these people who've sort of just taken it on one person at a
right
time and are really struggling. And that's what you hear on Wisconsin Public Radio, people who are passionate about the issues that matter to them, that matter to the world, that matter to our country and our state. 800-383-9772 is the number to call if you're passionate about the conversations and information and insights you gain here on Wisconsin Public Radio. A healthy goal this hour. The phones have to keep ringing. We want to hear from you in the next 7 minutes. WPR.org if you're listening along online.
I like the comments from Elizabeth from Shorewood. No one in Wisconsin should complain about not being informed on various crises around the world. It's all laid out for us by Wisconsin Public Radio, and
right.
I think there's a great deal of truth in that. So given that, we are asking you to pledge. We'll be very happy to send you this disturbing but important DVD, The Devil Came on Horseback, a documentary film on Darfur. The images are extraordinary, and it lays out the story of what's happening there and why the world is allowing it to happen. So show it. See it, show it, talk about it, have other people see it, show it, talk about it. 800-383-9772 is the number to pledge. 800-383-9772. Or if you'd like, you could pledge online today at WPR.org. WPR.org.
I would also like to thank Pamela from Lake Mills, who called in and said that her and her husband have a lot of great conversations based on your programs. Thank you. So thank you, Pamela from Lake Mills, for calling in with that comment. I think that's very indicative of a lot of our listeners this hour. More importantly, if you call in at that $180 level to get a DVD, you're also going to become a member of Public Radio, and you will continue this conversation. You're going to want to share this with family and friends. So important to call in this hour. We do have a goal of $9,000, but we have several more minutes, and I think we can get there. A call with $180 is going to get you a copy of that DVD, The Devil Came on Horseback. WPR.org is the website, or you can call at 800-383-9772.
And if you haven't pledged before, now is the time to do it. You'll walk away feeling better about yourself and knowing that you've helped support this fine service that you've accustomed to here on Wisconsin Public Radio. Kathleen, I see that, well, it just changed, but there were about half of the people who have called in this hour are new members, and the pledge drives that we do here on the air are our most direct and convenient and easy way to talk directly to you, whether you're a longtime member or especially new members who've never pledged before. Go to your phone right now and help pay for this service. 31% of our budget comes from folks just like you who listen along, who learn, who care about issues, whether they're in your neighborhood or around the world in Darfur. You're passionate about issues, you're a news junkie, and you maybe want to make a difference in the world. Wisconsin Public Radio brings you these stories that are in the headlines or off the beaten track every single day here on Wisconsin Public Radio. Put a dollar amount on that. Certainly that's worth $10 a month, $15 a month, $20 a month. That's pennies a day to help support this service. Go to your website right now, WPR.org, and click on our secure server. Become a member and a contributor here on Wisconsin Public Radio.
You know, there are certain things that we talk about, people who are out to change the world and change them in a very important way. And it's a hard thing to pledge for, except that it's an incredibly important topic. Stopping genocide in the world is a very important thing to do. And here's this, you know, it's amazing. It's a one guy's story who's a Marine who's absolutely dumbstruck by what he sees in Darfur. He's got a camera, he takes these horrendous pictures, and then he tries to get the world to pay attention to it. So because of what he did, we're doing this right now
yep.
as well, and we want you to pledge, get the DVD, have people over so you can look at this and talk about it and do something about it. You know, there is action to be taken. 800-383-9772, 800-383-9772, or WPR.org. You'll be helping their cause, and you'll be helping us as well so that we can tell you about their cause.
Right. Brian can't do it alone with
no.
getting the story out, and Wisconsin Public Radio can't continue to bring you this type of programming without your support.
Right, right.
So this hour, it's very important. We're inching up towards that goal. We have several minutes left, so you still have time to log on at WPR.org or pick up a phone and give us a call at 800-383-9772. A pledge this hour of $180 is going to get you a copy of that DVD. Get your copy. Show it to every. Watch it yourself. You will be moved by it, and you will want to share it with others. It's going to be something that's going to stay with you for a long time.
Mm-hmm. Wisconsin Public Radio takes pride in this sort of programming. You know, when we have open lines, or when Rhonda and Kathleen and I get emails, you know, they say, "Well, here's a good topic. Why don't you cover this?" Because no one in the media is paying attention to this particular mm-hmm. issue, and we get that all the time. Well, here is an issue that maybe the media isn't paying a lot of attention to, but certainly Wisconsin Public Radio is. And this is the sort of conversation that you hear day after day, week after week, here on Wisconsin Public Radio. Stories small and large, stories that are important to us here in Wisconsin, but and the world. And we can make a difference by bringing you that. And you know this is the sort of thing you receive every day on Wisconsin Public Radio.
Pledge through the news. We have a goal of $9,000. The Devil Came on Horseback is a documentary film on Darfur using the firsthand testimony and photos of U.S. Marine Captain Brian Steidel. It's hard to watch. It's important to watch. $180 for a pledge, and we'll send it to you. 800-383-9772. I better say it again. 800-383-9772. Bill Estes, thanks.
Thank
Rhonda
you.
Fanning, thank
and
you very much.
Thanks to all of you who pledged this
yes,
hour. Yes,
definitely.
You.
And thanks to John Treader, too, for answering phone calls, and to Rhonda for producing the hour. We got to go. This is the Ideas Network.